Episode 115 of Futures Radio Show, sponsored by CME Group, the world's leading and most diverse futures and options exchange. CME Group's markets help individuals and businesses around the world manage risk and seize opportunities. Learn more at futuresfundamentals.com.
Every day, traders and investors dive in to tackle the ever-changing markets to find opportunity. Futures Radio Show is your number one source for answers to the questions that all market participants want to ask. Veteran futures trader Anthony Crudele sits down with the most influential leaders and top traders in the industry. Now, here's your host, Anthony Crudele.
Hey everyone, I'm here at FIA Boca, and before we get started with today's interview, I want to thank all of our sponsors, CME Group and Trading Technologies. With TT, you can trade the global markets from virtually anywhere. They are the world's fastest commercially available futures trading platform. Create your account and try it now free at tryttnow.com. Today I spoke to a man who was born in Jersey City, attended Skidmore College in Saratoga Springs, New York, where he graduated Phi Beta Kappa with Government Department Honors. He practiced law for 16 years in New York, then joined a Wall Street software firm and swaps technology business where he and the co-founder brought the company public. He was asked by President Obama to sit on the commission at the CFTC and is currently the acting chairman of the CFTC and President Trump's nominee to be chairman. His name is Christopher Giancarlo. Today we talked about his journey to becoming the acting chairman of the CFTC and the role of the CFTC and what it oversees. We discussed the current state of the clearing ecosystem and why it's been consolidating. He also revealed a new initiative he will be pushing at the CFTC called the Market Intelligence Branch. He told us how he wants the agency to put forward rules that are not the least restrictive, nor the most restrictive, but the best balanced regulation with the goals of sustaining a healthy, stable, and vibrant market. Finally, we discussed the budget, and I asked him what he thought about self-funding. It was a great honor to speak to Acting Chairman Giancarlo. He's a super guy who is giving this industry a very optimistic outlook. Thank you all for listening, and please enjoy this episode. Acting Chairman Giancarlo, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. You have one of the most important roles in the industry as you are the acting chairman of the CFTC, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. Now, before we get into some important topics being discussed here at FIA and across the futures industry, can you tell us how you got your start in the industry and take us through your journey up to the moment you found out you received the nomination of the chairman of the CFTC?
Wow, that's a bit of a journey. But my background is as a lawyer. I practiced law for 16 years in New York and London. And in 2000, was a partner in a large New York law firm working with technology companies. And one of my clients was a software company that made a software used to price currency options, one of the most widely used pricing softwares called Fenix software. And the company was being sold, and it was being sold to a New York-based inter-dealer brokerage firm for swaps, not for futures. And the swaps industry was an industry that had grown up over the last several decades. Swaps are different than futures. They're not exchange traded, and their liquidity, unlike futures, is fairly episodic. And so there's firms what are called inter-dealer brokers, firms made up of individuals that help traders of swaps find each other. And I was a buttoned-up New York lawyer negotiating the sale, and one day the owner of the company that we were selling the software to asked me to come visit him at their offices at 100 Wall Street. And I got off the subway, I got off the number 4 line on Wall Street and walked down Wall Street to number 100. And as I approached the corner of Wall and Water, I noticed a young man in his early 20s in a suit and tie, dancing on the corner. And I looked at him like I was wondering what he had for lunch and why he was dancing, but I passed him by, crossed the street, and I turned back, and he was still dancing. And then I went into the lobby of 100 Wall Street and looked out the window, and he was still dancing. And then I took the elevator up to the 10th floor, and when I got off the 10th floor where I was told to go, I noticed everyone was looking out the window, watching him dance on the corner. So clearly he worked in this place. And when I asked them why he was dancing, they said because he screwed up the lunch order.
Oh, man.
And what I quickly learned about this industry was it had its own practices. And in fact, in order to be a good broker, one had to be able to carry in one's head about 10 different orders, bids or offers, at one time. And one of the way they trained young people was to give them very complicated lunch orders. And if they failed in the lunch order, they often had to do something silly like dance on the street corner.
Yep.
That was my first introduction to the brokerage industry and swaps. And not long after that, the founder of that company that was buying the software asked me if I would join his firm. And I told him that I was very happy as a law partner in my law practice. And he said, no, I don't want you to be my lawyer. I'd like you to be my business partner. And I would like to raise private equity to build electronic trading systems, some of the very first auction-based technologies to trade swaps. And then his goal was to take the company public. And so I left my law practice in 2000, joined the firm, and we raised private equity in 2002, 2003. And in 2005, we successfully IPO'd the firm on the NASDAQ. And in 2006, we took it onto the New York Stock Exchange. And it became a very successful, and today is a very successful firm. In 2012, I advised the Romney campaign on swaps market reforms, areas where I felt the CFTC had some flaws in its approach to swaps execution. And in 2013, President Obama had become familiar with my work and asked me to fill a Republican seat on the commission, unanimously confirmed by the Senate in 2014, and began my service on the commission in June of 2014, and in upon President Trump's election, I was sworn in as acting chairman, and I was recently nominated to become full chairman, and that is now subject to Senate confirmation once again.
Talk to me a little bit about the moment that you found out that you were going to be the chairman. It had to be a real thrill for you.
I found out I was going to serve as acting chairman because I'm the only Republican. I found out that on election evening because I'm the only Republican. I was the only Republican on the commission. And so by virtue of President Trump's nomination, the former chairman, Tim Massett, stepped down on Inauguration Day and I was sworn in. I just found out on Tuesday evening here when the president nominated me for the full position, and it's an honor to be asked to serve my country in that role. After 30 years, 16 years as a lawyer and a dozen years in business, as I mentioned, now to, in a sense, go into my third career serving my country is a tremendous honor, and I look forward to serving as leader of this great commission, should I be confirmed by the U.S. Senate.
Yeah, it is a tremendous honor, and I wish you all the best with that. Well-deserved, sir.
Thank you.
Now, thank you for sharing your backstory with us, Mr. Chairman. Now, let's talk about the role of the CFTC. We have all levels of traders listening to Futures Radio Show, from institutional to brand-new retail traders. So I'm sure that some of our listeners out there are asking, what does the CFTC do? What is their role? Can you tell us what the role of the CFTC is?
Sure. So there's a number of ways to look at it, but one way is that in our federal system, we have two market regulators in the United States. We have the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, that regulates markets for the trading of stocks and bonds, corporate equities, corporate debt. We then have the CFTC, which is pretty much responsible for everything else. So we have the cash markets that underlie the cash markets in agriculture, in precious metals, in energy, and then in financial derivatives. But another way to look at the difference is the SEC oversees the investment markets. That is, if you're looking for upside opportunity in corporate ventures, corporate enterprises, you can buy their stocks, you can buy their bonds. But in either case, you're looking to take advantage of the upside of corporate success. The derivative markets, which are regulated by the CFTC, are not investment transfer markets. They are risk transfer markets. They are markets in which a bearer of risk is looking to offload some of that risk, or another way to put it is to hedge the risk. So if you're a farmer that is planting in the spring, and you have the risk that the price will fall at harvest time, and you won't be able to cover your costs of planting and farming and irrigation and fertilization, you have risk, you have price risk. And you're looking to transfer that price risk to someone who's willing to bear it in return for a price. If you're a manufacturing concern, you might have energy risk of the cost of cooling your factory in the summer, heating your factory in the winter. If you are looking to build a new football stadium, you may have the risk that your long-term bonds of variable interest rates, the interest rates may rise and they may cost you more to pay on those bonds. So you have interest rate risk. If you're a lender, you might have credit risk that the people you lend money to can't honor their obligation to repay that money. So you have credit risk. All of these risks are traded in derivative markets. So derivative markets are risk trading markets, and they are regulated by the CFTC. Investment markets are markets in stocks and bonds, and they are regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission. One of the reasons why the SEC might be better known than the CFTC is because for the most part, those investment trading markets are retail markets. Most people have stocks in their portfolio, 401ks, they may have some government bonds, and they're familiar with the regulation of those markets by the SEC. But the risk transfer markets that we regulate at the CFTC are mostly business-to-business markets. Most Americans don't have exposure to oil prices. Well, they do in their automobile, but they don't have it in terms of barrels of oil. And they get fixed loans or fixed mortgages and don't have that type of interest rate risk that big banks do, or credit risk. So the risk hedging markets overseen by the CFTC are, for the most part, professional markets. And therefore, our reputation is well known by America's banks and insurance companies, but not as well known by homeowners and retail market participants. But the markets we oversee at the CFTC, depending on how you measure it, are somewhere between 5 and 10 times larger than the markets overseen by the Securities Exchange Commission. So we're not as well known, but we cover a much wider waterfront than does the SEC.
Excellent explanation. And I love how you explained how businesses are using the derivatives markets. I love that. So one of the hot topics here at FIA and across the entire financial industry is a call for comprehensive review of all financial reform regulations. Now, as we know, President Trump is talking a lot about deregulation for the financial industry. And the CEO of FIA, Walt Lucken, recently wrote a letter to the president, which I think that all traders should Google and read. And he focused on 4 key points. He talked about wholesale review of regulations, smart regulation and enforcement, globally accessible markets, focus on innovation and competition. Now, something that all traders can relate to is that we all have a clearing firm. And in Walt's letter, he asked President Trump, why is there consolidation among members of this industry such that risk is now more concentrated? So now we have less clearing members. So can you talk to us about the current state of the clearing ecosystem and this consolidation we're seeing in clearing members?
Thank you. That's a great question. And there's a number of elements to it. But I thought the letter that the Futures Industry Association and Walt Lucken sent to the president was an excellent piece of work.
Yep.
And we at the CFTC are committed to following the president's directive. And in following it, I think we're going to be very aligned with the recommendations of the Futures Industry Association. So in that first item that you mentioned, how do we make our rules less burdensome? Yesterday, as acting chairman of the CFTC, I announced a new initiative at our agency, which I call Project KISS, which stands for Keep It Simple, Stupid. And it's an initiative to look at all of our rules and say, without changing the rule, without rewriting the rule, without repealing the rule, but taking the rule as is, how can we apply it in a way that is simpler, less costly, and less burdensome? Let me give you an example. Right now, two different divisions in our agency ask for some of the same data from our registrants. One division asks for the same data in one file format. The other division asks for the same data using a different electronic file format. Could we not just use one file format and therefore simplify somebody's time at dozens, if not several score of our registrants? That little bit of savings, I don't know what that amounts to, but that's one little bit of friction in the American economy to help our economy grow that much faster. If you multiply this amongst, I think, dozens of rules that we're now discovering at the agency, we can get to the same place and the same. We can serve the same agency mission, but can we do it in a way that is less costly, less burdensome? So we are moving forward with Project KISS at the agency, and I think that dovetails very nicely with what Walt Lukin has asked the president to do. Secondly, his second point is to say we need to regulate smarter. And to that extent, we are setting up two new initiatives at the agency. One is we are creating a new market intelligence branch at the agency whose job is to look carefully and understand the very rapidly changing market dynamics. You know, the markets that we were created to regulate were markets that existed in our father's time. Trading pits, you know, if you see the movie Trading Places, those old open outcry pits are the way the structure in which our rules were designed to regulate. And yet those trading pits are gone. The markets have gone electronic. They've gone digital. And yet our rules are still built for an analog world. So our new market intelligence unit is going to be looking at these changes and making us a smarter regulator. And the second initiative is we're creating a new role, and that is our chief market intelligence officer, who's going to be a senior member of the agency who's going to really make it their job to understand these changes and help us move into the 21st century as a regulator to step up to this challenge. Now, the third item that Wald mentioned was international. How do we make our markets more conducive to attract global capital to trade in our marketplaces? And I think we can do a much better job. My goal is to make sure that our agency puts forward rules that are not the least restrictive, and not the most restrictive, but the best. What we want to have is the best regulation. That's the best balanced regulation. Regulation that balances the requirements with the goals of a vibrant market. We want stable and healthy markets, but we want vibrant, robust, active, deeply liquid markets. And our rules have to be based upon making them the best balance. And if we have the best balance rules, global capital will flow here as opposed to flow elsewhere. And that's what we want. Capital doesn't flow. Some people think that if you have the most permissive, the least restrictive regulation, capital will flow there. If that's the case, then probably Zimbabwe would have the best, you know, would be the IPO capital of the world or the futures trading market of the world. But that's not the case. There's a reason why capital flows to well-regulated markets. You know, the New York IPO market is the world's leading IPO market, and nobody says that the SEC rules are easy to list a new company. They flow there because they're the best. And we want to do the same thing in the future space. We want to have the best rule set. We want to do the same thing in the swaps market. We have the best rules so capital flows to where they're the best.
Can I tell you, hearing you say the KISS theory, it was so great to hear that, because as a trader my whole career, that has been my whole motto. And to hear now, you know, the acting chairman of the CFTC have that same type of model, it was really great to hear that from you. So let's move on and talk about smart regulation. Like a lot of things in the political world, the pendulum shifts back and forth. We go from less and even loose regulations to stricter and more complex regulations. And you mentioned smart regulation. Walt Lukin has mentioned smart regulation. We've talked about smart regulation and enforcement a lot in this conference. Can you tell us what you believe needs to be addressed to the current state of regulations?
We need to do, the president has called for a 120-day review of our Dodd-Frank implementation. Dodd-Frank was a response to a devastating financial crisis, a financial crisis that caused Americans to lose billions of dollars in their retirement funds, in businesses that shut down, and lost commercial opportunity. Dodd-Frank was a response to what was undoubtedly a devastating crisis. In Dodd-Frank, Congress set forth timetables for regulators to enact those reforms. Some of those timetables were very tight. It would have been a remarkable thing that in the response to a devastating crisis, within those very strict, tight timeframes, if regulators got everything right, it would have been miraculous. Even Barney Frank, who wrote a good portion of the rule, said that he doesn't expect we'll get everything right and some things may be to be changed. Some things may need to be adjusted, tweaked, fine-tuned, even reconsidered. Well, that reconsideration period has not happened till now, and now is the time to do it. We've had this law now on the books going on 7 years. We've had implementation by the CFTC and other financial regulators. We know what's working and what's not. And now's the time for us to sit back. The crisis has passed. The American economy is on the verge of getting back to a normalized rate of growth. And by the way, normalized rate of growth in the United States is higher than it has been these past few years. And with that rate of growth returning, it's time to take a close look at our rules and be candid about what's working and what's not working. The market has absorbed many of the reforms of Dodd-Frank, and I don't think that many of the reforms are going to be repealed. I think, though, it's incumbent upon regulators to do an honest appraisal of what's working and not working and do our best to make it work better, more efficiently, and to get us back to that normal American rate of growth, which is higher than we've seen.
Very well said, and I could hear the cheers and applause from everybody listening to this as well. Let's talk about an article that was written in Reuters a little while back about the budget. And in the article it said, as many U.S. government agencies are girding for possible steep cuts in their annual budgets, the top U.S. derivatives regulator on Monday signaled he was optimistic about the possibility of keeping his agency's budget flat. Your predecessors made a big deal that the agency's budget was inadequate. Do you share their belief, and where do you stand on this issue?
So I spent a dozen years in business, and before that 16 years practicing law, and in both cases I had responsibility for a budget process and for the units that I led to build their budget. And every year we would go through a bottom-up process to establish what resources were necessary to meet our mission for the coming year and what allocation we needed to receive. But every year we started new. We didn't take last year's budget and say, well, that's the starting point. Our goal every year is to incrementally move that up. But that's what happens in government. In government, I've learned in the last 2.5 years I've been here, everyone starts from a number and tries to sort of get their share of the apportionment to move that number up. I want to bring business practices to my role at the CFTC. I don't start the analysis of the CFTC's budget at our current last year's budget of 250 and work off that number. I'm starting de novo, as we say in the law. I'm starting from new. I want to understand what this agency does today with every dollar given to it by Congress. And I want to understand where they're spent and which of those dollars are directly contributing to our mission and which of those dollars, if any, or which of those nickels or dimes may be misspent or better spent. And once I have a sense, and I'm in the middle of this now, of what is the necessary resources for our mission, once I know where every dollar is currently being spent and what we need to spend going forward, then I intend to sit down with the Office of Management and Budget in the executive branch and sit down with congressional appropriators and discuss with them what I believe, bringing my business hat to bear, bringing a de novo, a new review of our budget, I intend to put forward to them a number that I think is the right funding number for this agency. And I cannot tell you today what that number is, what relationship it has to the old number. I can't tell you whether it's more, I can't tell you what it's less, but I can tell you that when I put that number forward, as a former businessman, I will be able to look an appropriator in the eye and say, sir or madam, this is the right funding level for this agency to achieve its mission as you've defined it under law.
What do you think about self-funding?
Well, I think it's we are not a self-funding agency, unlike some of our peer agencies like the SEC. And that's a choice that was made long before I got there by Congress. But it's sometimes a misnomer by people that comment on this, that there is not some degree of self-funding in our agency, because our agency participants pay fees to a large self-regulatory organization called the National Futures Association, the NFA, for some degree of the regulatory mission that is performed by that self-regulatory organization. So to those who say that, you know, the participants in this market are benefit from taxpayer dollars, well, they do pay large fees to the self-regulatory organization to participate in the market. And one of the things that I mentioned yesterday is I want to examine, do we at the CFTC have the right balance of sharing that mission with NFA? And are there perhaps more things NFA can do, funded by the industry, to share that mission to oversee the industry properly? And that's something I will be exploring going forward. But ultimately, the question of whether the CFTC should be a self-funding agency similar to the SEC is something for Congress and the White House to determine. I will, as a good executive, perform the role of chairman, however that is defined by Congress and the White House.
Mr. Acting Chairman, before I let you go, is there anything else you'd like to add to today's conversation?
You know, I've been coming to the FIA conference in Boca, and there are a few conferences that I'm aware of that do a better job than this one of bringing together business concerns with policy concerns. And I do sense this year a growing enthusiasm, excitement that we may be on the verge of robust growth, of healthy market activity, of a newfound energy. I don't know whether you want to call them green shoots, but a budding sense the economy is on the verge, and that's a wonderful thing. I think that we have, you know, I've called this a tepid recovery. There's no doubt that the recovery of the last few years has benefited a few people in a few large cities on the East and the West Coast. I'd like to see a recovery that benefits all our citizens in this country, broad-based economic recovery. And I'm optimistic that we might be on the verge of that. And this industry, the futures industry and the swaps industry, have a vital role to play. That risk transfer mechanism that I talked about when I began, if there's not healthy risk transfer, there won't be healthy lending. Banks, in order to lend, whether they're lending for the large infrastructure project that the new president's talking about or for commercial lending, need to be able to lay off that risk in a vibrant and robust derivative market. So I'm very excited that we're going to revitalize these markets and manage them and regulate them carefully. But as we do that, bring back economic vitality across the nation for people in all walks of life, not just in large cities, but in small ones and small towns across the country.
Mr. Acting Chairman, I can't thank you enough for taking time to speak with us today on Futures Radio Show. I can't remember attending a conference where the attendees were this optimistic about the future. So thank you again for sharing your story with us, and I wish you all the best as chairman.
Thanks so much, Anthony. This was a lot of fun. Let's do it again sometime.
Definitely. Thank you, sir. Thank you for listening to Futures Radio Show. If you have any questions or comments for myself or my guests, please visit futuresradioshow.com and sign up to be a premium member for free. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.